हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय। ओके So then, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chapter 6, Liberation of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, verse 26, 269 to 272, and page 165. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya continued, "There are two kinds of Sayuja Mukti, merging into the Brahman effulgence and merging into the personal body of the Lord. Merging into the Lord's body is even more abominable than merging into his effulgence." Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya concluded, "Even though he is offered all kinds of liberation, the pure devotee does not accept him. He is fully satisfied, engaging in the service of the Lord." Footnote 46. This verse was spoken by Lord Kapiladeva in Srimad Bhagavatam 3:29-13. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "The word muktipade has another meaning. Muktipad refers directly to the Supreme Personality of Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All kinds of liberation exist under the feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is known as Muktipada. According to another meaning, Mukti is the ninth subject, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the shelter of liberation." Srila Prabhupada. Lord Sri Krishna is also known as Mukunda, or he who gives transcendental bliss by offering all kinds of Mukti. Srimad Bhagavatam is divided into 12 cantos, and in the ninth canto, different kinds of mukti are described. But the 10th canto is the actual center of all discussions of mukti, because the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who is the 10th subject discussed in Srimad Bhagavatam, is the exclusive subject of the 10th canto. Since all types of muktis reside at the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, he may be called Muktipada. 26, 273, 286. "Since I can understand Krishna according to these two meanings," Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "what point is there in changing the verse?" Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya replied, "I was not able to give that reading to the verse. Although your explanation is correct, it should not be used, because there's ambiguity in the word muktipada. The word mukti refers to five kinds of liberations, but its direct meaning usually conveys the idea of becoming one with the Lord. The very sound of the word mukti immediately induces hate and fear. But when we say the word bhakti, we naturally feel transcendental bliss within the mind." Upon hearing this explanation, the Lord began to laugh, and with great pleasure, immediately embraced Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya very firmly. Indeed, that very person who had been accustomed to reading and teaching Mayavad philosophy was now even hating the word mukti. This was possible only by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As long as it does not turn iron into gold by its touch, no one can recognize an unknown stone to be a touchstone. Upon seeing transcendental Vaishnavism in Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, everyone could understand that Lord Chaitanya was none other than Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj. After this incident, all the inhabitants of Jagannath Puri, headed by Kashi Mishra, came to take shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. Later, I shall describe how Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya always engaged in the service of the Lord. I shall also describe in full detail how Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya perfectly rendered service to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by offering him alms. If one hears with faith and love these pastimes concerning Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's meeting with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he very soon is freed from the net of speculation and fruit of activity and attains the shelter of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet, praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rup and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy. I, Krishnadas, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. Srila Prabhupada writes in his teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 26. Thus, Bhattacharya, who had taken pleasure in explaining Mayavad philosophy, became such a staunch devotee that he even hated to utter the word mukti. This is only possible by the causeless mercy of the Lord, of the Lord Sri Chaitanya. The Lord is like a touchstone, for by his grace he can turn iron into gold. After his conversation, everyone marked a great change in Bhattacharya, and they concluded that this change was made possible only by the inconceivable power of Lord Chaitanya. Thus they took it for granted that Lord Chaitanya was none other than Lord Krishna himself. Right, because Krishna is Muktipada, so that he can liberate someone from all these things. Only he could do. Right? And he's the only one that can give bhakti. In his chapter summaries of Sri Chaitanya Bhagavad, Antikanda chapter 2 and 3, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes, on seeing Jagannath and meeting the Lord after a long separation, Mahaprabhu became so absorbed in ecstasy that he was about to embrace Jagannath, that as he was about to embrace Jagannath, he fell unconscious to the ground. At that time, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was in the temple, taking darshan of Lord Jagannath. On seeing the condition of the new sannyasi, he understood, according to the symptoms described in the scriptures, that the Lord was an exalted personality. When the temple guards were about to beat the Lord, Sarvabhauma forbade them from doing so and brought Mahaprabhu to his own house. By and by, the devotees headed by Nityananda arrived there. After the Lord regained his external consciousness, he resolved to see Lord Jagannath only from behind the Garuda pillar, because right? Otherwise he would run up. He would run up and try to embrace the Lord, and so that caused problem before. Then, after taking bath, the Lord displayed the pastime of honoring Mahaprasad with the devotees at the house of Sarvabhauma. One day in Nilachal, Mahaprabhu, on the pretext of humility and with his actual identity concealed, inquired from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya about his prescribed duties. Being bewildered by the Lord's illusory energy and considering Mahaprabhu an ordinary living entity and a sannyasi, Sarvabhauma gave the Lord various instructions and ascertain the uselessness of accepting Mayavad sannyas in Vaishnava Dharma. He also quoted statements of Sri Shankaracharya to substantiate that it was not Sri Shankara's internal intention to establish the philosophy of oneness between the living entities of the Lord. On the pretext of humility, the Lord revealed to Sarvabhauma that his sole purpose in accepting sannyas was to display the pastime of cultivating Krishna consciousness. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was considering Mahaprabhu as simply an exalted sannyasi. When Mahaprabhu inquired from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya about the meaning of the Atmarama verse, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya explained it in 13 different ways. Without touching any of those explanations, Mahaprabhu astonished Sarvabhauma with many new meanings and then displayed to Sarvabhauma his six-armed form. Sarvabhauma thus fell unconscious to the ground, and Mahaprabhu brought him back to consciousness by placing his hand on Sarvabhauma's body. Then, out of his causeless mercy, Mahaprabhu placed his lotus feet on the chest of Sarvabhauma, who, by the Lord's mercy, became filled with ecstasy and profusely repented for his audacity of previously instructing Mahaprabhu. He then prayed to the Lord for loving devotional service and began to glorify him by composing 100 verses. Mahaprabhu then told Sarvabhauma that persons who recite those 100 verses called Sarvabhauma Shataka would certainly attain pure devotional service to him. The Lord also told Sarvabhauma not to inform the public about the six-armed form that he had manifest for as long as he remained in this world. After delivering Sarvabhauma, the Lord made the lives of the residents of Nilachal successful by distributing to them the mellows of the holy name of Hari. Conclusion. The factual meaning of the aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra is as clear as sunshine. The Mayavadi philosophers simply try to cover the sunshine with the clouds of interpretations imagined by Shankara and his followers. The Brahma Sutra, composed by Srila Vyasadeva, is as radiant as the sun. One who tries to interpret its meaning simply covers that sunshine with a cloud. All the Vedas and literature that strictly follows the Vedic principles explain that the Supreme Brahman is the absolute truth, the greatest of all, and a feature of the Supreme Lord. Actually, the Supreme Absolute Truth is a person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full with all opulences. The Mayavadis are trying to explain him as impersonal and formless. Wherever there is an impersonal description in the Vedas mean to establish that everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That everything belonging to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is transcendental and free from mundane characteristics. Verses 138 through 141. So the impersonal thing is just to show that it's all connected to the Lord and his transcendental position and his control of all the potencies and all that. That's the aspect that's being brought out there. Shankaracharya's theories state that the absolute truth is transformed. By accepting this theory, the Mayavadi philosophers denigrate Srila Vyasadeva by accusing him of error. Thus, they find fault in the Vedanta Sutra and interpret it to try to establish the theory of illusion. Verse 172. Right, so they denigrate him, that he's made an error, but at the same time as they also, you know, want to say that they're following Vedanta Sutra by using that as their authority, though they're technically not. Srila Vyasadeva presented the Vedanta philosophy for the deliverance of conditioned souls, but if one hears the commentary of Shankaracharya, everything is spoiled. Verse 169. The first verse of the Brahma Sutra is Atato Brahma Jigyasa. We must now inquire into the absolute truth. The second verse immediately answers Janmadyasya Yataha. The absolute truth is the original source of everything. Janmadyasya Yataha does not suggest that the original person has been transformed. Rather, it clearly indicates that he produces this causing manifestation through his inconceivable energy. 172 purport. A common brain in the conditioned state cannot conceive of how these inconceivable energies abide in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how he exists in his innumerable forms as the master of both spiritual and material energies, how he is the master of both manifest and potential powers, and how contradictory potencies can abide in him. As long as a living entity is within this material world, in the condition of illusion, he cannot understand the activities of the inconceivable energies of the Lord. Thus, the Lord's energies, though factual, are simply beyond the power of the common brain to understand. 171 purport. The actual purpose in reading the Vedas is to learn how to become a devotee. The actual purpose in reading the Vedas is to learn how to become a devotee of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, after studying the Vedas, one must then execute devotional service by thinking always of the Supreme Lord, Manmana, becoming his devotee, worshipping him, and always offering him obeisances. This is called Vishnu Aradhana, and it is the supreme occupational duty of all living beings. 178 purport. One should always remember that all Vedic literature are self-evident. No one is allowed to interpret the Vedic verses. If one does so, he indulges in imagination, and that has no value. 179 purport. Those who have taken shelter of the Vedic scriptures yet preach agnosticism in accordance with the Mayavad philosophy are certainly more dangerous than the Buddhists. Verse 168. Thus, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu criticized Shankaracharya's Sharirika Bhasya as imaginary, and he pointed out hundreds of faults in it. To defend Shankaracharya, however, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya presented unlimited opposition. The Bhattacharya presented various types of false arguments with pseudo-logic and tried to defeat his opponent in many ways. However, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refuted all these arguments and established his own conviction. Verse 176. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the central point of all relationships, sambandha. Acting in devotional service to him is one's real occupation, abhideya. And the attainment of love of Godhead is the ultimate goal of life, prayojana. These three subject matters are described in the Vedic literature. If one tries to explain the Vedic literature in a different way, he is indulging in imagination. Any interpretation of the self-evident Vedic version is simply imaginary. The factual meaning of the that's verses 178 to 179. The factual meaning of the aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra is as clear as sunshine. The Mayavadi philosophers simply try to cover the sunshine with the clouds of interpretations imagined by Shankaracharya and his followers. 130 purport. Okay, so that ends the study on the sixth chapter. So now we move into the next section, next part, from chapters 7 through 9. So 7 is Lord Chaitanya, the Lord's tour of South India. 8 is talks between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai. And 9 is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's travels to the holy places. Chapter 7, the Lord's tour of South India. Pratigya. When a person actually revives his consciousness with thoughts of Krishna by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he revives his spiritual life and becomes addicted to the service of the Lord. Adhyaya Prakashita. In his Amrita Prabaha Bhashya, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur summarizes the seventh chapter as follows. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the renounced order of life in the month of Magha, January, February, and went to Jagannath Puri in the month of Phalgun, February, March. He saw the Dol Yatra festival during the month of Phalgun. And in the month of Chaitra, he deliberated Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. During the month of Vaishak, he began to tour South India. When he proposed to travel to South India alone, Sri Nityananda Prabhu gave him a Brahmin assistant named Krishnadas. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was beginning his tour, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya gave him 4 sets of clothes and requested him to see Ramananda Rai, who was residing at that time on the bank of the river Godavari. Along with other devotees, Nityananda Prabhu accompanied the Lord to Alanath, but there Lord Chaitanya left them all behind and went ahead with the Brahmana Krishnadas. The Lord began chanting the mantra, Krishna, 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 hey. In whatever village he spent the night, whenever a person came to see him in his shelter, the Lord implored him to preach the Krishna consciousness movement. After teaching the people of one village, the Lord proceeded to other villages to increase devotees. In this way, he finally reached Kurmastan. There, while he bestowed his causeless mercy upon a Brahmana called Kurma and cured another Brahmin named Vasudev, who was suffering from leprosy. After curing this Brahmin leper, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu received the title Vasudeva Amrita Prada, meaning one who has delivered nectar to the leper Vasudeva. Shloka Anusharanam. Summary verses, verses 1 to 75. Lord Chaitanya begs permission from his devotees to go on pilgrimage. 76 to 92. The farewell party at Alalanath. Verses 93 to 120. The Lord begins his journey. Verses 121 to 135, the Lord Chaitanya instructs a Brahmin named Kurma. 136 to 155, the Lord delivers the leper Brahmana, Vasudeva. Verses 1 to 75, Lord Chaitanya begs permission from his devotees to go on pilgrimage. 271 through 22. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being very compassionate towards a Brahmin named Vasudeva, cured him of leprosy. He transformed him into a beautiful man, satisfied with devotional service. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the glorious Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All glories to Lord Nityananda Prabhu. All glories to Advaita Acharya, and all glories to all the devotees of Lord Chaitanya. After delivering Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the Lord desired to go to South India to preach. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the renounced order during the waxing fortnight of the month of Magh. During the following month, Falgun, he went to Jagannath Puri and resided there. At the end of the month of Falgun, he witnessed the Dol Yatra ceremony, and in his usual ecstatic love of God, he chanted and danced in various ways on the occasion. During the month of Chaitra, while living at Jagannath Puri, the Lord delivered Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and at the beginning of the next month, Vaishak, he decided to go to South India. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called all his devotees together and, holding them by the hand, humbly informed them, "You are all more dear to me than my life. I can give up my life, but to give you up is difficult for me. You are all my friends, and you have properly executed the duties of friends by bringing me here to Jagannath Puri and giving me the chance to see Lord Jagannath in the temple. I now beg all of you for one bit of charity. Please give me permission to leave for a tour of South India. I shall go to search out Vishwaroop. Please forgive me, but I want to go alone. I do not wish to take anyone with me. Till I return from Setabandha, all of you dear friends should remain at Jagannath Puri." Knowing everything, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was aware that Vishwaroop had already passed away. A pretense of ignorance was necessary, however, so that he could go to South India and liberate the people there. Upon hearing this message from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all the devotees became very unhappy and remained silent with sullen faces. Nityananda Prabhu then said, "How is it possible for you to go alone? Who can tolerate this? Let one or two of us go with you. Otherwise, you may fall into the clutches of thieves and rogues along the way. They may be whomever you like, but two persons should go with you. Indeed, I know all the paths to the different places of pilgrimage in South India. Just order me, and I shall go with you." The Lord replied, "I am simply a dancer, and you are the wire puller. However, you pull the wires to make me dance, I shall dance in that way." After accepting the sannyas order, I decided to go to Vrindavan, but you took me instead to the house of Advaita Prabhu. While on the way to Jagannath Puri, you broke my sannyas staff. I know that all of you have great affection for me, but such things disturb my activities. Jagannanda wants me to enjoy bodily sense gratification, and out of fear I do whatever he tells me. If I sometimes do something against his desire, out of anger, he will not talk to me for 3 days. Briti. As mentioned in Adi Lila, Jagannanda is Satyabhama. Thinking that Lord Chaitanya was suffering discomfort, Jagannanda made a comfortable bed for him. Jagannanda also brought a large quantity of scented oil from Navadvip as a gift for the Lord. Although the Lord declined to use these gifts, he was always careful not to offend Jagannanda too much. He paid special attention to Jagannanda's well-being. These pastimes will be described in detail in the Anta Lila. 2.7.23-27. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "Being a sannyasi, I have a duty to lie down on the ground and to take a bath 3 times a day, even during the winter. But Mukunda becomes very unhappy when he sees my severe austerities. Of course, Mukunda does not say anything, but I know that he is very unhappy within, and upon seeing him unhappy, I become twice as unhappy. Although I am in the renounced order of life and Damodar is a brahmachari, he still keeps a stick in his hand just to educate me. According to Damodar, I am still a neophyte as far as social etiquette is concerned. Therefore, he does not like my independent nature. Damodar Pandit and others are more advanced in receiving the mercy of Krishna. Therefore, they are independent of public opinion. As such, they want me to enjoy sense gratification, even though it be unethical, right? Because they're all seeing him as the supreme, as Krishna. So they want him to, you know, have nice facilities and enjoy like Krishna. But since I'm a poor sannyasi, I cannot abandon the duties of the renounced order. And therefore, I follow them strictly." Srila Prabhupada. A brahmachari is supposed to assist in sannyasi. Therefore, a brahmachari should not try to instruct a sannyasi. That is the etiquette. Consequently, Damodar should not have advised Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of his duty. Briti. As mentioned in the Antya Lila, Damodar Pandit instructed the Lord to stop giving his association with the son of a widowed young Brahmin lady. Evidently, this was Damodar Pandit's general mood from the beginning. So he's always just telling him, you do this, do that, because Lord Chaitanya does things nicely, but Damodar Pandit, will be more strict and everything. So it's just all part of the particular flavor of the relationship and everything. I don't remember who it said Damodar Pandit was, but, accordingly he's instructing. 2728-29. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu concluded, "You should all therefore remain here in Nilachal for some days while I tour the sacred places of pilgrimage alone." Actually, the Lord was controlled by the good qualities of his devotees. On the pretense of attributing faults, he tasted all those qualities. Srila Prabhupada, all the accusations made by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu against his beloved devotees actually showed his great appreciation for their intense love for him. Yet he mentioned these faults one after another as if he were offended by their intense affection. The personal associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sometimes behave contrary to regular principles out of intense love for the Lord. Because of their love for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, and because of their love, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself sometimes violated the regular principles of a sannyasi. In the eyes of the public, such violations are not good. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so controlled by his devotees that he was obliged to break some of the rules. Right? So you see, it's just the exchange of that affection. So they wanted him to, eat something or do something or things like that that would be for his comfort, for his pleasure. And because they were doing it with such affection, then Lord Chaitanya would be inclined to follow that affection. But it's saying about the general rules are there because the general public can't understand these things. They just know someone's a sannyasi. They do grihastha, they do this. Brahmachari does this. Brahman does this. That's all they know. They can't understand how all that's engaged in the Lord's service and how that's then, yes. Although accusing them, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was indirectly indicated that he was very satisfied with their behavior and pure love of Godhead. Therefore, in verse 27, he mentions that his devotees and associates place more importance on love of Krishna than on social etiquette. There are many instances of devotional service rendered by previous acharyas who do not care about social behavior when intensely absorbed in love for Krishna. Unfortunately, as long as we are within this material world, we must observe social customs to avoid criticism by the general populace. This is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire. So Lord Chaitanya wants us to behave in that in such a way that you won't get the criticism. Because those kind of things, that criticism, then they can't see anything else. And not seeing anything else, then everything becomes destroyed. Because it's like, okay, you have all these nice things, but if there's one spot, it's all useless. That's why the example is given of the all the blemishes on the moon, but everyone appreciates the moonlight. So, but we see in the general public, then if there's one fault, then they think everything's wrong, like that. They can't, they're unable to adjust. Of course, with themselves, then of course it'll be, oh, it's just this one thing. Why can't people see the good? Why can't they see the intention? Why do they have to be so, external? And that's how they'll look for themselves. But when it comes to others, then they'll exactly follow those points that they make. So he's saying here, this is Lord Chaitanya's desire. 2730-37. No one can properly describe Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's affection for his devotees. He always tolerated all kinds of personal unhappiness resulting from his acceptance of the renounced order of life. The regular principles observed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were sometimes intolerable. and all the devotees became greatly affected by them. Although strictly observing the regulative principles, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could not tolerate the unhappiness felt by his devotees. Therefore, to prevent them from accompanying him and becoming unhappy, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declared the good qualities to be false. So it was just a trick to just, because otherwise if they came, they'd be dissatisfied. Because you're traveling, where they're going to stay, what they're going to get to eat, you know, where they're going to bathe, the difficulties that may come up there, you know, bumping into people on the road, all these different things. Then the dealings they might be in anxiety about. So then Lord Chaitanya wants to be able to taste this aspect of not being connected with anything worldly and just being absorbed in the mood of Radharani's love for Krishna. And so then that aspect there, you know, and go out and preach and all that, because otherwise they'll be happy. You stay here, we'll go out. But he wants to go out himself.
Maharaj?
Yes.
In the life of a devotee, is it, we speak about the importance of the association of devotee, but can we say that sometimes it is important also to be alone?
Yes, it can be. I mean, it depends on the individual. If when being alone, then you can think about things and analyze things, then yes, you should spend some time alone. But if when you're alone, you just get restless and want to do something, so then better to always stay with devotees. So it just depends on the individual. Because some individuals, where they're alone, they have a problem.
Yes.
Right? And so those who don't have a problem being alone, then they can be alone. But they shouldn't just be alone.
Yes.
You know, there'll be times with devotees and then times to be alone where you can, you know, contemplate. But it shouldn't be that it becomes a major thing to be alone. You know, it's not that everything has to change and all those things like that. Because alone just means, you go out in the backyard and sit down, or, you know, go for a little walk or like that. It's not like, oh, you have to have your own completely separate things and this and that. And, you know, does that make sense? Like that. So it can't become an issue, you know, like that. It's just, if the nature is there, you just need a little time. So you just, you know, go for a japa walk, or, you know, just whatever is the situation, you know. Does that make some sense?
It seems that it's important to develop introspection, contemplation in our own personal life. And
yes,
means there are different ways to develop that. But sometimes one way is to think, you know, about our own life, where we are, where we want to go, and to have some, structure, some stable structure, you know.
Go ahead.
Yeah, here we see that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he accepts sannyasi, and he was following the normal path of sannyasi. For example, to travel alone like that, you know, with one assistant and so on. It's maybe for to show us the importance to follow our dharma.
Yes, because the point is if it's about preaching, then, you know, generally you want that the, you know, the public wouldn't have any complaint.
Yes.
Right? Based on Vedic rules and regulations. If the public has their own opinions that are not Vedic, and so then they'll find fault in properly following devotional service, there's nothing really you can do about that.
Yes.
You know, we don't change that, you know. We continue, because then by association eventually, then they take prasad, they hear the kirtan, the holy name, then, you know, they may get purified. You know, so the point is there should be no reason for criticism, but people will find fault anyway. A fault finder will find fault even if there's no fault. Right. Yeah. So, in that way, then, you know, then they can listen to what you're talking about, because for the general person, whatever is their value in morality, that is the prominent thing in their life. So when you discuss about the pure devotional service, then the idea is that they don't have any complaints on the moral platform, because that takes precedence. For many people, they'll think that only by being established in morality, that what gives you then the qualification for devotional service. But devotional service means doing things to please Krishna. That's what it means. Then you yourself and your position and whatever is your the natural duties that you have, that morality you're following and serving the Lord. But others may have other ideas and this and that. You know, and so you can't worry about those ones. Yes. You worry about the actual position, you know, just like when Srila Prabhupada brought so many devotees from the West, people are complaining, how can they be Brahmins and wear the sacred thread and worship the deity, chant Gayatri, you know, when they're not born in India, in Brahmin families. So that's their idea of the morality. So then it becomes a difficulty because, one, it doesn't say about being born in India. There's just advantages because of, you know, people being engaged in devotional activities and knowing about, you know, the Vedic scriptures and the culture. But that's not actually a prerequisite. And then second is they say they have to be born in a Brahmin family to be to have that upanayanam in that. But actually, originally, it's Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. So conveniently, somehow or another, it becomes cut out and it's only Brahmins. So that's their idea. And you have to be born into the Brahmin family rather than it is by qualities, guna and karma. Right? So even though it's based on the Veda, it's wrong. So we don't care about those things. Right? So in the same way, even in the West, they have their own sense of morality. If it's wrong, we don't worry about it. You know, we don't try to agitate them, but we don't worry about that. So if we're not worrying about, you know, Brahmins and all that and their practices in India having a misunderstanding, why would we care about those who don't follow the Vedas and have a misunderstanding? You know, we try our best to explain it and make everything clear. But if they don't understand it, that we can't, you know, change for them.
Yes.
You know, so that's the point, is that we have our standards, we follow our standards. You know, we have that conviction, you know, the Shastras are there, the Acharyas have given us, you know, what their direction, we follow that direction, then everything becomes perfect. That's the idea. Does that make sense? So it's not that if we disturb public opinion, then we can't preach. It's that we follow what we should do. And that already, devotional service already includes all morality. People may or may not like, but it's like from one person to the next, they like or don't like. You know, so whatever you do, it's wrong. You know, like that story of the father, the son, and the donkey.
Yes.
Yeah. So whatever they did, if they both walked on the ground, it's wrong. If one of them was on the donkey, it was wrong because the other one should be on the donkey. And then someone else says, why aren't you both on the donkey? And then someone comes along, poor donkey, why are you both on the donkey? You know, like that. So they're back on the ground. So like that, they went through all these things to try to, so you can't do it. It's a useless thing. It doesn't matter what you do. It's interesting that back in the, you see these articles in newspapers in the, you know, late 60s, 70s, like that. And where journalists are coming and just writing down everything that devotees are saying and publishing it in the article, all talking about Krishna and the holy name and this and that. The devotees didn't pull any punches. They just told it as it is. You know, they say it pleasant, say it as it is. And the journalist wrote it in the article. But nowadays, oh, you can't say this, can't say that, don't say this, don't say that. And then they write nothing about Krishna in the article. You know, yeah, nice guys, you know, a little weird, have shaved heads, you know, except the guy I talked to and he didn't have a shaved head. And we asked him why, and oh, but it's not so necessary and this and that. So they don't even understand who Hare Krishnas are. You know, it's just, Yeah. So the whole point is that one has to be very careful that, yes, that means you're considering public opinion based on the Vedic standards, but it's not about public opinion and what we do in devotional service. We do what Krishna and the Acharyas recommend. That's what we follow. One has to have that conviction. So you can't use it as a political position about the public. But, you know, we still follow. And so Lord Chaitanya likes to follow, especially South India, because the Muslims didn't go down there. So then, you know, it means a very minimal, you know, up to Hyderabad. So then you're going to have, you know, so much more understanding of the Vedic culture and everything like that. And then going down there, he can be a very strict sannyasi. So to this day, he's known amongst, you know, all the different temples and mutts in South India as the greatest sannyasi. Right? So they all know Mahaprabhu is the greatest sannyasi. They don't know he's the Supreme Lord. They don't know what his philosophy is. Nothing. They just know he's the greatest sannyasi. That's all. And so then, like that. And so then, then he can preach. They would accept all these things. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's good for the preaching and that. So he was doing. Okay. Yes. The regulative principles. Okay. He always tolerated all kinds of personal unhappiness resulting from his acceptance of the renounced order of life. The regulative principles observed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were sometimes intolerable, and all the devotees became greatly affected by them. Although strictly observing the regulative principles, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could not tolerate the unhappiness felt by his devotees. Therefore, to prevent them from accompanying him and becoming unhappy, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declared the good qualities to be false. Four devotees then humbly insisted that they go with the Lord. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being the independent Supreme Personality of Godhead, did not accept their request. Thereupon, Lord Nityananda said, "Whatever you order is my duty, regardless of whether it results in happiness or unhappiness. Yet I still submit one petition to you. Please consider it, and if you think it is proper, please accept it. You must take with you a loincloth, external clothes, and a water pot. You should take nothing more than this. Since your two hands will always be engaged in chanting and counting the holy names, how will you be able to carry the water pot and the external garments?" Right, so he's saying, you know, that in line with, he wants to be strict as a sannyasi. So he's saying, therefore, you know, you're going to have these things and you're not going to take anything more than this. You know, that's the thing. And so that's going to get the approval of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then he mentions, but because you're going to be chanting, you know, how will you be able to carry the water pot and the external garments, right? So in other words, on one hand, you're chanting the japa, you know, around, you know, how you chant. And on the other hand, then when you finish, then you count, you know? And so you can remember a certain amount. So depending on how you're counting and all that, then you can one, you know, that like that, and then the ideal is you can do 108 and then count one round. But whether, you know, it means Lord Chaitanya could remember and people then could remember, whether you could remember now is another thing. So you do, you know, one and then one and that, you know, but then you've already used up 10 to get one round. Now, how do you count the round? Right. So the idea is you're going to count a round on the one hand, you know, going around, you know, right? Then you're going to count one round, then do another 10 and eight, then two, then another 10 and eight, three, like that. So that way you could remember. So then you finish 20, you know, or you do 16. And do that four times, like that. That's probably easier. you know, like that. So then his point is this then, that, yes.
No, it's okay. Go ahead. Please go ahead.
I was just going to start reading again.
Oh, okay. So the tradition during the time of Lord Chaitanya is you got the Kamandalu, you got the Padukas, you got your fingers for counting. Now,
yes, you, and then you always take your fingers. You don't leave them at home. Yeah.
And you got a, you know, a set of copies. Now, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, as far as I know, introduced the Tridandi, you know, the stuff for sannyasis.
Right, right.
And now, did he give a specific instruction how long a sannyasi must carry that danda wherever he goes? Because we see in ISKCON, you know, the first 3-4 years, they all carry their danda and then that's it.
Srila Prabhupada mentioned 10 years.
Oh, 10 years.
That's what he had mentioned, 10 years. And you see some still carry, like Indradyumna Maharaj, he carries when he can, and a few others they carry.
Like that. Some sannyasis, they have one danda in each continent.
Yes, that also makes it. Some even have in you know, many temple, you know, in as you know, in an area, so they have a danda.
Right.
You know, so basically, is whatever you can go to by driving, then you just need one danda. But if you have to fly, then that where you fly to, that place has a danda.
Or the collapsible.
If they have any from the past, because otherwise the present, I don't think we're making, so. You know, that may be another thing is because the brahmacharis didn't learn how to, you know, maintain the dandas and stuff like that. So if anything happened or it broke, you know, so it came down to kind of like just we made dandas and no one else made dandas, you know. Very rare. Like Krishna Kshetra Maharaj, when he took sannyas, he came and learned from the boys how to make the dandas, made his own danda, sat there with them and made it. But otherwise, then we generally make them, and very few others, you know, even know how to rewrap them and stuff like that. And then how are they going to bring it all the way back here to rewrap it? And so then like this, it becomes, you know, it becomes lost, you know.
Okay.
You know, you're saying because, you know, when it, so these kind of traditions then, you know, easily get lost, you know, in the milieu of you know, trying to figure out which management system is the bomb today. You know, it's like, you know, what's the latest, what's the greatest, you know, we should be doing that, because, you know, and so then they get distracted,
right?
But otherwise before is, you know that kind of like general brahmachari, you know, strict kind of lifestyle. Some yatras you see it's very strong, and other ones it's not.
Yes.
So it's just mainly by association that one picks those up and one does those things. And yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, 10 years is what Prabhupada mentioned. But generally, I mean, and the problem is that you're either carrying a danda or a umbrella. Because umbrella also counts. Because then it's like if it's rainy season, you'd use an umbrella like that.
Or a cane.
You know? That's when it gets older that you need a cane, then instead of the danda, you use the cane. So that would be the natural thing. You'd use the danda until you needed a cane. Then you'd start carrying the cane.
I remember in the 90s, someone criticized Bhakti Tirtha Swami. He said, "You never carry your danda." So the next morning, he came to Mangalati here in Mayapur, and he had this amazingly carved cane with the head of Nrisimhadev on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, he was said, all night. He was working all night to carve that one, right?
He said, "This is my danda, and it's authorized."
Yeah. Yeah, it's something. Yeah, it works. You know, generally it would be because you need to use a cane. But, you know, also sometimes in the West, not so much now, but before, the gentlemen sometimes would use canes. you know, just because, you know, had a stick or this or that. So,
thank you very much.
Okay. So now he's making the point that since you'll be chanting with both hands, how will you carry the water part in external garments? Srila Prabhupada. From this verse, it is very clear, it is clear that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was chanting the holy names a fixed number of times daily. Goswamis used to follow in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Haridas Thakur also followed this principle. Concerning the Goswamis, Srila Rupa Goswami, Srila Sanatan Goswami, Srila Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Srila Jiva Goswami, Srila Gopal Bhatta Goswami, and Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, Srinivas Acharya confirms, Shankya Purvaka Nama Gana Nativihi, Sad Goswami Astaka, 6. In addition to other duties, right? So Shankya means to count. You know, so they were counting their rounds. They weren't just chanting like that. Because otherwise, if it was just chanting, it didn't matter, then he doesn't even need to count at all. So both hands are free, you know. So, but he was counting. In addition to other duties, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced the system of chanting the holy name of the Lord a fixed number of times daily. So that comes from Lord Chaitanya. As confirmed in this verse, Tomara Dui Hasta Bhadha Nama Ganane. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to count on his fingers. While one hand was engaged in chanting, the other hand kept the number of rounds, right? So that means he was remembering 10 times a round in the right hand, then one on the other, you know. This is corroborated in the Chaitanya Chandamrita and also in Srila Rupa Goswami Stavamala, Chaitanya Chandamrita 16. Badnan Prema Bhara Prakampita Karo Gatin Kati Dora Kai Shankyatum Nija Loka Mangala Hare Krishneti Nam Nam Japan. And the Pratama Chaitanyastika. So that would be Rupa Goswami's. 5. Hare Krishnet Yuchai Spurita Rasano Nama Ganana Krita Grantish Shreni Subhaga Kati Sutro Jvala Kara. Therefore, devotees in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu must chant at least 16 rounds daily. And this is the number prescribed by the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Haridas Thakur daily chanted 300,000 names. 16 rounds is about 28,000 names. There's no need to imitate Haridas Thakur or the other Goswamis. But chanting the holy name a fixed number of times daily is essential for every devotee. So we chant the 16 rounds. We don't have to then try to be like the Goswamis or Haridas Thakur. That's all we're, you know, that's our main engagement of that. Yeah. Main engagement, meaning our main engagement is always to chant and remember the Lord, but means we're doing nothing else other than chanting. Because they would be fully absorbed, they would be, you know, by the name. And they would be able to preach. See, Haridas Thakur could chant 3 lakhs a day and preach. So it wasn't a problem for him. So if chanting more means you're not preaching or not doing other services, then better to chant 16 and do your services. 2:7, 38-39. Sri Nityananda Prabhu continued. When, along the way, you fall unconscious in ecstatic love of Godhead, who will protect your belongings, the water pot, garments, and so forth? Right. So the whole point is now and again you're going to fall. He's not saying if it ever happens. He says, along the way, you fall unconscious in ecstatic love. Who will protect your belongings? Because otherwise, people just come along and take all this cloth and water pot, you know, especially the local village kids. Like that. The monkeys might even take it, right? Here is a simple Brahmin named Krishna Das. Please accept him and take him with you. That is my request. Srila Prabhupada. This Krishna Das, known as Kala Krishna Das, is not the Kala Krishna Das mentioned in the 11th chapter, verse 37 of the Adi Lila. The Kala Krishna Das mentioned in the 11th chapter is one of the 12 Gopalas, cowherd boys, who appeared to substantiate the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is known as a great devotee of Lord Nityananda Prabhu. The Brahmin named Kala Krishnadas, who went with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to South India and later to Bengal, is mentioned in the Madhya Lila, 10th chapter, verses 62 to 79. One should not take these two to be the same person. Right? So one's, you know, a simple Brahmin that's there, that's got the mercy of Lord Nityananda Prabhu and Lord Chaitanya. And the other is an eternal associate who's in the line with Lord Nityananda Prabhu. You know, he's one of the Dwadas Gopalas. Yeah. 2740-53, Sri Nityananda Prabhu concluded, "He will carry your water pot and garments. You may do whatever you like. He will not say a word." Right? So you can move around, because his whole point is he wants to be able to move as he pleases. And so Nityananda Prabhu, then appreciating that, then is saying, he'll carry all your stuff, and that way you can move, do whatever you like. He will, and he won't say a word, because there was, remember the point of Damodar. Damodar Pandit, that he'd point out faults or corrections or better things to do or things like that. And so, like that. And you do whatever you want. You take bath 3 times a day in cold water or not, he won't say a thing. So all the different things that devotees were either upset with his strict followings of the sannyas, or they would give instruction like that, he won't do. So, and you can do whatever you like. Right? So that's this. Accepting the request of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, Lord Chaitanya took all his devotees and went to the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. As soon as they entered his house, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya offered the Lord obeisances and a place to sit. After seating all the others, the Bhattacharya took his seat. After they had discussed various topics about Lord Krishna, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu informed Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, "I have come to your place just to receive your order. My elder brother Vishwarup has taken sannyas and gone to South India. Now I must go search for him. Please permit me to go, for I must tour South India. With your permission, I shall soon return very happily." Right? So with your permission means that he'll go, and he'll, with your permission, I'll return very soon. You know, it's just like in the Bengali, someone's going, they don't say goodbye, they say ashun. Means, you know, you please come back, you know, you please come. And they'll say aschi, I will come. They don't say, so, and here he's saying, he says, so with your permission, I shall soon return very happily. Right. So even, you know, it's just like in traveling, you know, you have the element of not really talking too much about where you're going and everything like that. So in the Brahmin community, you know, they're very careful about these kind of discussions and that. And so then when someone's going somewhere, but you don't know where, then you may ask them, oh, where will you be returning from? Not where will you be going to, but where will you be returning from? You know, so you have all these kind of like fine etiquettes that are there, you know, in the Vedic tradition, you know, especially on this point, the Bengalis, the Gaudiya tradition. Upon hearing this, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya became very much agitated. Catching hold of the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave his sorrowful reply. After many births, due to some pious activity, I got your association. Now providence is breaking this invaluable association. If a thunderbolt falls on my head, or if my son dies, I can tolerate it. But I cannot endure the unhappiness of separation from you. My dear Lord, you are the independent Supreme Personality of Godhead. Certainly you will depart. I still know that. I know that. Still, I ask you to stay here a few days more so that I can see your lotus feet. Upon hearing Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's request, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu relented. He stayed a few days longer and did not depart. The Bhattacharya eagerly invited Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to his home and fed him very nicely. The Bhattacharya's wife, whose name was Shati Mata, the mother of Shati, did the cooking. The narrations of these pastimes are very wonderful. Later I shall tell about this in elaborate detail, but at present I wish to describe Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's South Indian tour. Right, he wants to talk about this and have that go. Then he'll talk about how Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya would invite, what they would cook, how they would do all the things, because these details. Because this eating culture, you see, is very much part one of Vaishnav culture in general, but especially amongst the Gaudiyas, you know. So you see, it's more like in Vrindavan, right? Krishna has his breakfast. Radharani comes over and cooks. Then the cowherd boys are there, and then Krishna and Balaram with Nanda Baba, and all Nanda's brothers, you know, Upananda and Sunanda, and them, they all sit and eat. And then Mother Yashoda is overseeing, Rohini and some of the gopis are serving, the other Radharani, the other gopis are watching, all that's going on. Then they're going to go out. Then you see, when they go out, they have their lunch bags and everything like this and that. And you know, they're going, and sometimes they steal Madhu Mangal's just for some fun to, you know, see him run around after it. Then when they get to that, so they sit down and have lunch, and it's a whole big scene like that. Then after that, then Krishna will go to Radhakund and all that. They'll be there, and after some pastime, they'll sit and eat something like that. Then they'll go back. Then there's in the evening, and then there's some evening meeting. Then they'll go to Radhakund. I mean, then they'll go to Govindastali, and there's the Rasa dance, and that, and these things are there. So you see, is that the eating is much more a part. Like in Dwarka, do you ever hear of pastime of Krishna eating? Right? No. Because of the majesty and all that, then it's the big things and all these things. Not that they didn't eat and not that they didn't sit with friends and all that, but that doesn't have the element of majesty to it. So it's a necessary thing. It's pleasant that devotees get involved, but it's not, it doesn't have the significance that it does in Braj. So being, Gaudiya is being Braj, you know, from Braj, then you see this, that therefore the confidential discussions, giving gifts, and exchanging prasad, these are very major parts in the life of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, you see is that he discusses in great detail about the meals and all that. And Prabhupada, I think he comments in the purport that to be able to discuss on such a level of detail, then he has to be a good cook, you know, because otherwise you could say, oh no, but he's just giving detail like historians do. It says, have you ever seen a historian give that much of a discussion of a meal? Right? No. They don't get into details. You just don't see it. You know, so unless you're a cook, you don't talk about those things. So to get into each preparation, how it was eaten, how they went about, how it was served, who served, how much they served, these things, then Krishnadas Kaviraj is getting into. So we can tell he must be a very good cook, like that. So then he wants to get into detail, because now it'll distract from the South Indian tour, because that's the topic that's happening now. Riti, the pastimes of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his wife feeding Lord Chaitanya and the offense of their daughter's husband, Amogha, will be described in Magdya Lila 15, 186 to 301, like that. So you even see how many verses are dedicated to the meal, right? Like that. After staying 5 days at the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally asked his permission to depart for South India. After receiving the Bhattacharya's permission, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to see Lord Jagannath in the temple. He took the Bhattacharya with him. Seeing Lord Jagannath, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also begged his permission. The priest then immediately delivered prasadam and a garland to Lord Chaitanya. Thus, receiving Lord Jagannath's permission in the form of a garland, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu offered obeisances, and then, in great jubilation, he prepared to depart for South India. Right, so then it's also, that's the common thing, you go to the deities, tell them what your plan is, where you're going, what you're going to do, all these things, and then taking their permission, then you go. Accompanied by his personal associates and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu circumambulated the altar of Lord Jagannath. The Lord then departed on his South Indian tour. While the Lord was going along the path to Alalanath, which was located on the seashore, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya gave the following orders to Gopinathacharya. Bring the 4 sets of loincloths and outer garments I kept at home, and also some prasadam of Lord Jagannath. You may carry these things with the help of some brahmana. While Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was departing, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya submitted the following at his lotus feet. My lord, I have one final request that I hope you will kindly fulfill. In the town of Vidyanagara, on the bank of the Godavari, there is a responsible government officer named Ramananda Rai. Wow. Okay. Ramananda Rai. In the Amrita Prabha Bhashya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that Vidyanagara is today known as Porbandar. There's another Porbandar in West India in the province of Gujarat, so it's not that one. 2763. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya continued, please do not neglect him, thinking he belongs to a Shudra family engaged in material activities. It is my request that you meet him without fail, right? So he's a government officer. He's the governor of South India because he's the governor of Madras. So Madras province at that time would have basically been the whole of South India. And so, you know, and he says he's responsible and all that. So we can see that in other occasions, Lord Chaitanya generally avoids government officers because they get so absorbed in their management that they don't take things seriously. But he said, don't neglect him because of that. And also because he's a Shudra, because if you're working for the government, you're a Shudra. You may be a big Shudra, you know, Mr. Shudra to us, you know, it's like that, you know. But the point is that he's still, you know, that's the position. So on those two accounts, don't ignore him like that. It is my request that you meet him without fail. Srila Prabhupada. In the Varnashram Dharma, the Shudra is the fourth division in the social status. Paricharyatmakam karma Shudrasyapi Swabhavajam. Bhagavad Gita 18:44. Shudras are meant to engage in the service of the three higher castes, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, right? So as the governor, he's engaged in working for the Kshatriya, for the king. Right. Sri Ramananda Rai belonged to the Karna class, which is the equivalent of the Kayasta class in Bengal. This class is regarded all over India as Shudra. It is said that the Bengali Kayastas were originally engaged as servants of Brahmanas who came from North India to Bengal. Later, the clerical class became the Kayastas in Bengal. Right? Now there are many mixed classes known as Kayasta. Sometimes it is said in Bengal that those who cannot claim any particular class belong to the Kayasta class. Although these Kayastas or Karanas are considered Shudras, they are very intelligent and highly educated. Most of them are professionals, such as lawyers or politicians. Yes. Thus, in Bengal, the Kayastas are sometimes considered Kshatriyas. In Orissa, however, the Kayasta class, which includes the Karanas, is considered in the Shudra category. See, Kayastas also, they may come from other groups. They may have been from Dwijas, but they take up this kind of office work, right? They're secretaries. And to be able to do that, they're very intelligent. So it mentions, I think, it's either Mano or Arthashastra. Then that these persons who do this work, this Kayasta work, must be very intelligent. They have to know how to write letters, you know, in other words, what to say for the occasions to get the work done. So they're officers that get this work done, all the official work done. So they have to be very intelligent. So they're not just regular general Shudras. You know, you just tell them what to do. These are ones that have to be able to think on their feet and get things done. That's what Prabhupada said, they're professionals. So nowadays the concept professional just means you're very good at your work, you're very thoughtful, you know, you do things very nicely. So the point is that doesn't mean that they're not Shudras. Because nowadays sometimes it's thought that, well, professionals, and that, you know, that's the thing to do. Professional just means you're very good at what you do. That's what you should be. So devotees should be very good at what they do. But the positions that they're in, a lot of times, then you see as Shudras. Like that. Srila Ramananda Rai belonged to this Karana class, therefore he was considered a Shudra, right? So in Bengal, those Kayasthas that work in the government thinks they'll be considered like the Kshatriyas. So all the guys in writers building and, you know, these IAS officers and these kind of things. And they do all this government work and all that. So then they'll be seen in that kind of category. But in Orissa, they'll just be seeing the Sudras. He was the governor of South India under the regime of Maharaj Prataparudra of Orissa. So the king in Orissa, Maharaj Prataparudra, he was in control of South India. So he had a very big kingdom. He wasn't just any old, you know, local king or something. In other words, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya informed Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Ramananda Rai, although belonging to the Shudra class, was a highly responsible government officer. As far as spiritual advancement is concerned, materialists, politicians, and Shudras are generally disqualified. So generally, they tend to not be interested in these things. Just by nature, they're so absorbed. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya therefore requested that Lord Chaitanya not neglect Ramananda Rai, who was highly advanced spiritually, although he was born in a Shudra and a materialist. A Vishayi is one who is attached to family life and is interested only in wife, children, and worldly sense gratification. The senses can be engaged either in worldly enjoyment or in the service of the Lord. Those who are not engaged in the service of the Lord and are interested only in material sense gratification are called Vishayi. Srila Ramananda Rai was engaged in government office service, and he belonged to the Karana class. He was certainly not a sannyasi in saffron cloth, yet he was in the transcendental position of a Paramahamsa householder. Before becoming Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's disciple, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya considered Ramananda Rai an ordinary Vishayi because he was a householder engaged in government service. However, when the Bhattacharya was actually enlightened in Vaishnava philosophy, he could understand the exalted transcendental position of Sri Ramananda Rai. Therefore, he referred to him as Adhikari. An Adhikari is one who knows the transcendental science of Krishna and is engaged in his service. Therefore, all Grihastha devotees are designated as Dasa Adhikari. By Dasa, the servant of the Lord, and they're qualified and engaged in the Lord's service. They know the science, they are engaged. Therefore, we use this term Adhikari. And Dasa, then, you know, it means servant of the Lord. So Dasa is a Brahmin name. I think its root is Dasri, like that. So it comes from that. It's also used for Shudras, meaning just their servants. But it's a Brahmin title. So then here, the rabbinical title, the Dasa with the Adhikari, you know, that they're engaged nicely in the transcendental service of the Lord. Then that establishes. So he was saying he's Adhikari, he's qualified. That's why he said he's qualified. Please don't neglect him. So before he would never have said that because, you know, he's from that Karna background and he's engaged in government service. So what would he know about transcendence? But now that he's been, he's become realized in the position of devotional service, then he knows from meeting him and what he talk about and what he deal that he is greatly elevated. Right? Because for Mayavadis, if you're talking about bhakti, they consider you on a lower level. So he would have been talking about that. And Sarvabhauma, you know, being who he was at the time, would have considered in that way. Right? But now that he's realizing Krishna consciousness has taken up pure devotional service, now he realizes he's a great devotee. So he asked Lord Chaitanya to please, you know, stop in and see him on his way going south. 2764-66. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya continued, Ramananda Rai is a fit person to associate with you. No other devotee can compare with him in knowledge of the transcendental mellows. Right? Because they would have also just considered that all just Rasa Shastra. And, you know, that's connected with drama. And so then, you know, in drama, you know, Shudras and this and that. So he just would have considered him not so very prominent. But now he understands. He is a most learned scholar as well as an expert in devotional mellows. Actually, he is most exalted. And if you talk with him, you will see how glorious he is. I could not realize when I first spoke with Ramananda Rai that his topics and endeavors were all transcendentally uncommon. I made fun of him simply because he was a Vaishnava. So he understood he was a Vaishnava. And government, all this. And so he just said, this guy's not a big scholar or stuff. Srila Prabhupada. Anyone who is not a Vaishnava or an unalloyed devotee of the Supreme Lord must be a materialist. Right? You know, it's easy. You know, they're Vaishnava or materialist. Right? Simple. A Vaishnava living according to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions is certainly not on the materialistic platform. Chaitanya means spiritual force. All of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's activities were carried out on the platform of spiritual understanding. Therefore, only those who are on the spiritual platform are able to understand the activities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Materialistic persons cannot understand these activities and are generally known as karmis or jnanis. The jnanis are mental speculators who simply try to understand what is spirit and what is matter. Their process is neti-neti. This is not spirit. This is not Brahman. You know, so basically they go through everything in the universe until there's nothing left and it's just void. And then they go, Haribo, you know, so that's their whole thing. The jnanis are a little more advanced than the dull-headed karmis, who are simply interested in sense gratification. Before becoming a Vaishnava, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a mental speculator, jnani. And being such, he always cut jokes with the Vaishnavas. Vaishnava never agrees with the speculative system of the jnanis. But the jnanis and karmis depend on direct sense perception for their imperfect knowledge, right? Because they're getting it from their senses, what they've seen. They've seen the material world. They've seen it suffering. And so based on that, that's there where they speculate and come to the conclusion that then spiritual means nothing. So they're not starting actually from that top. You know, they're just like the karmis. So that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes the point that in the material world, there's only karmis and jnanis. That's it. There isn't something else. Then you have the devotees, but they're not from here. They're from the spiritual platform. The karmis never agree to accept anything not directly perceived, and the jnanis put forth only hypotheses. However, the Vaishnavas, the unalloyed devotees of the Lord, do not follow the process of acquiring knowledge by direct sense perception or mental speculation, because they are servants of the Supreme Lord. Devotees receive knowledge directly from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as he speaks it in the Bhagavad Gita, or sometimes as he imparts it from within as the Chaita Guru. As Lord Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita 10:10, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Yes, so then the devotees understand because the Lord is directing. A Vaishnava is always engaged in the transcendent loving service of the Lord, and thus neither karmis nor jnanis can understand the activities of a Vaishnava. Right? It is said, Vaishnavara Kriya Mudra Vigyeha Na Bhujai. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 23:39. Depending on direct perception of knowledge, cannot understand the activities of Vaishnava. After being initiated into Vaishnavism by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya realized what a mistake he had made in trying to understand Ramananda Rai, who was very learned and whose endeavors were all directed to rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord. So as a jnani, he couldn't understand, but then when he took up devotional service, he became a devotee, then he could understand what an elevated personality he was. 2.7.67-69. The other one also? Oh, 64-66. The Bhattacharya said, by your mercy, I can now understand the truth. In talking with him, you also will acknowledge his greatness. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's request that he meet Ramananda Rai. Bidding Sarvabhauma farewell, the Lord embraced him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked the Bhattacharya to bless him while he engaged in the devotional service of Lord Krishna at home. So that by Sarvabhauma's mercy, the Lord could return to Jagannath Puri. So he's saying that you please, when you're doing your puja, remember him, and so that he gets blessed so that he can come back to Puri. Srila Prabhupada. The word kariha, ashirvad vadhe, means continue to bestow your blessings upon me. Being a sannyasi, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in the fourth order of life and was thus due all respect and adoration. Whereas Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, as a householder, was in the second order. A sannyasi is supposed to be offering blessings to the grihastha. Yet now, by his practical behavior, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requesting the blessings of a grihastha. This incident shows the special significance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's preaching. He gave equal status to everyone, regardless of material considerations. His movement is thoroughly spiritual. Although apparently a grihastha householder, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was unlike the so-called karmis interested in sense gratification. After being initiated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Bhattacharya was perfectly situated in the spiritual order. Therefore, it was quite possible for him to offer blessings even to a sannyasi. He was always engaged in the service of the Lord, even at home. In our disciplic line, we have the example of a perfect householder, Paramahamsa, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. In his book, Sharanagati, Bhaktivinoda Thakur states, Jaidina grihe bhajana deki grihete gokula bhaya. Sharanagati 3:16. Whenever a householder glorifies the Supreme Lord in his house, his activities are immediately transformed into the activities of Goloka Vrindavan. Spiritual activities taking place in the Goloka Vrindavan planet of Krishna. Right, so these positions are just for, you know, basis of interaction. But as far as being Krishna conscious, as far as leading in Krishna consciousness, you know, speaking on Krishna consciousness, there's no order, any distinction made between who's there. You just have the social etiquettes you do, because that just makes everything go nicely. You know, just like, let's say, someone's running a business, and so he has devotees working for him, but they're just, you know, going to be seen just as in the same position as they are as devotees. But when it comes to running the business, then of course, then you know, there'll be a deference to whoever owns the company. So the same way is that you have all these things. So for the social aspects and all that, then these orders are seen in that capacity. But otherwise, as far as being Krishna consciousness and leading in Krishna consciousness, they don't have any significance there. The conclusion is that one who acts strictly in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is competent to offer blessings to sannyasis, even though he be a grihastha householder. Although he is in an exalted position, a sannyasi still must elevate himself to the transcendental platform by rendering service to the Lord, by his actual behavior. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu begged the blessings of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. In this way, he set the example of how one should expect blessings from a Vaishnav, regardless of his social position. So it's by the blessings of the Vaishnavs, then everything goes very nicely for us. That's the whole point. It's that the blessings of the Vaishnavs, how will there be auspiciousness? So he's gaining all that from then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. 2:7:70-72. Saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu departed on his tour, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya immediately fainted and fell to the ground. Although Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya fainted, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not take notice of him. Rather, he left quickly. Who can understand the mind and intention of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? This is the nature of the mind of an uncommon personality. Sometimes it is soft like... Yes. Yes.
This particular incident just reminded me that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya fainted when Lord Chaitanya left. Later on, when Gadadhara Pandit will want to go with Lord Chaitanya, he will go up until the border, and then Lord Chaitanya will say, now you go back. And then Gadadhara Pandit will faint. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya says, get up. These are the pastimes of the Lord.
Yes. Yes, that's the thing here. By his actual behavior, this is the nature of the mind of common personality. Sometimes it is soft like a flower, but sometimes it is hard as a thunderbolt. Because they have to consider that's just like, it's the pastimes of the Lord, so that's just the way it is. You know, because, you know, a consideration like we can see in Vrindavan, Krishna doesn't go back and then leave again because they wouldn't be able to handle that. It means he left, it's already bad, and they're suffering from that, but he comes back and they attain him after so much separation. Then he leaves again, then they won't be able to tolerate that. So you see, when Krishna goes back to Vrindavan, like was discussed in the Nectar Devotion, he went back, he stayed. He didn't leave again.
Yeah.
So he went out, and then he went back. So the same way is he just has to leave, because if he goes back and sees Sarvabhauma, he already fainted. And then now Lord Chaitanya is back again, and then he goes again, it'll be even more devastating. So he just goes. Right. And also Prabhupada makes that point, you know, following Lord Chaitanya's, this point is that, you know, when it's time to go, you say all your pleasantries, you say all the different things and the exchanges and everything like that. Then when it's time to go, you just go.
Yes.
Like that. Like you see, Prabhupada would be talking with everybody and everything like that. And when that's done, he would just turn his head forward and then they would just drive.
Yes.
You know, so that's the thing. Because otherwise, then it just gets, what's the point? It's just, you've already said everything, the emotions have been said, so what would be the continuation now? Because you're going, you can't stay. So there's no advantage there. It's not that it enhances the rasa or anything like that. So therefore then, you know, what it is, it was, is what it is. Okay, yes. So, okay. The softness of a flower and the hardness of a thunderbolt are reconciled in the behavior of a great personality. The following quotation from Uttara Ramacharita 2.7, quoted in text 73 below, explains this behavior. One may also consult the Madhya Lila, 3rd chapter, verse 2.12, footnote 1, translation. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was unaffected. He left swiftly, and Advaitacharya followed him, weeping. Purport. As Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, the word nirapeksha means not being affected by anything material and remaining. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very much cared for the roaring tumult. Roaring tumult and cry at the house of Advaitacharya, which he heard when he started for Jagannath Puri. Worldly moralists may criticize Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for being very cruel, but the Lord did not care for such criticism. As the world teacher of the Krishna consciousness movement, he actually showed that a person seriously engaged in Krishna consciousness should not be affected by worldly affection. The best course is to engage in rendering service to the Lord and to become callous to material objectives. Externally, everyone is attached to material things. But if one becomes entangled in such things, he cannot make progress in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, those who engage in Krishna consciousness should not care for the so-called morality of the material world, if that morality opposes the service of the Lord. As Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has personally shown, one cannot properly execute Krishna consciousness without being neutral. Like, because that neutral state, then you deal what's appropriate for the time. So in his interaction, like, it's not that he just said, okay, I'm leaving, and just went out. He everyone knows, he interacts with everybody, does everything, makes, you know, whatever it is, on various glorifications, appreciations, exchanges of feelings and all that. But once that's all done and everybody said whatever they're going to say, now it's just a matter of the experience. So now you go, because nothing more to do, nothing more to say. Like that. So you have to be a neutral. And he says you can't worry about the so-called morality of the material world, because it's more moral today, it's one thing, but then tomorrow it's something else. It doesn't make any sense, right? It just doesn't make sense what they do. Just like, let us say, you know, just as a funny example, let us say you make, if there's a movie, like if somebody makes a movie today, you know, in these Hollywood movies, if the whole cast is, you know, white Caucasian, then they'll be criticized, you know, where's everybody else? You know, why, you know, this world is not just white people. You know, this, that is not real. It's not that. It's not. Why? Blah, 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 blah. They go on and on and on. Fine. No problem. But then if you have a movie that's just black people, nobody else. Oh, I see how liberal it is, how modern it is. Just like, but isn't that the same thing? What's the difference if it's all black or all white? What's the difference? So that's the thing. Their so-called morality. You know, they say that it's important like this, but at the same time as then, you know, after some time, whatever was important today, then tomorrow is not, and it's something else. So that's why you can't be too worried about that. You explain things nicely to them, and that to the best you can. But the point is, it doesn't change what's to be done, you know, like that. So, yeah.
Hi.
Someone saying something? Oh, it's time. Oh, yeah, it is time. Okay. So we'll stop here. Yes. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Haribol.